349031, Kalamazoo Transportation versus Kalamazoo Public Schools. May proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. Phil Iorio, on behalf of the plaintiff appellants, the Kalamazoo Education Association, and its representative, Tim Russ. My client maintains, as a matter of law, that the trial court erred in its decision. We are asking that this court overturn the lower court's ruling granting summary disposition to the Kalamazoo Public Schools and denying summary disposition filed by my client. My argument's based on two prongs. The first is that the records in question, the bus referral discipline forms, are not education records under the Family Educational and Privacy Rights Act, otherwise known as FERPA. And because they are not education records, they are thus not exempt under the Michigan Freedom of Information Act, or known as FOIA. A second and independent argument is that even if these records are education records under FERPA, they are still subject to disclosure, both under FERPA and under FOIA, under Section 14, which requires that any exempt material be separated from the non-exempt material. If plaintiff appellant prevails under either of these legal theories, or under both of these legal theories, then it's our position that this court must reverse the lower court's decision. I'll start first with the first argument regarding the education records themselves, which you have as an attached exhibit, the bus referral discipline forms. Based upon the plain reading of the federal statute, FERPA, these records do not constitute education records. And that you would look to Section 1232G of the Federal Code. The definition of federal records essentially has two components. Number one, they have to directly relate to the student. And number two, they have to be maintained by an educational agency or institution. We maintain that these records do not directly relate to a student. And the support for that is found in the attached affidavit of Tricia Dinda, who's not only a bus driver, but an association representative. In her affidavit, she explains why these records do not directly relate to a student. Rather, they directly relate to the working conditions of the Kalamazoo bus drivers. They are based on working conditions and affect their performance. Who rides the bus, what type of issues have come up in the bus, what they're supposed to do with respect to who's on the bus and maintaining order on the bus. Her affidavit explained that the bus drivers are the ones who actually fill out these forms in triplicate. They turn in the form, they maintain a form on their own person or through their own record-keeping mechanisms, and then they're supposed to get a form back completed by Kalamazoo Public Schools that direct them on how they're to manage the operation of the bus. Because they don't directly relate to students, they cannot be FERPA education records. They do involve students, but they don't directly relate to students. We think there's case law that's instructive on this point, and we've cited two cases. One, Wallace versus the Cranbrook Schools, which is a federal court decision out of the Eastern District of Michigan. In that case, the discharged employee was seeking records from the school that included student statements. The court, in looking at the records, ascertained that they were not FERPA-protected education records because although they did involve students, they did not directly relate to students. We think that case is instructive. A similar case out of Massachusetts, also addressing FERPA, in that state's public disclosure law, found that a teacher who was challenging discipline sought records that were from students from the school. And again, in that case, the court looked and said that although these records involve students, they don't directly relate to students. So we respectfully submit that the trial court got it wrong in ruling that the bus referral discipline forms are education records under FERPA. That's our first argument. Our second argument, which is even stronger than our first argument, is that, before I move on, the school district did submit an affidavit from a school administrator that basically concluded these are education records, therefore they're protected by FERPA. We respectfully submit that's a role for the court to determine, and that the school administrator can't conclusively establish whether a document is or is not.
If we rule in your favor, what would you have us do? What would the remedy be?
The remedy would be to have the documents actually the case be remanded so that the court order that the school district go through, if you find that they're not education records, that they be released. If you find that they are education records, then the court would order that any personally identifiable information be redacted. So if we prevail on the first argument that I've just mentioned, the lower court decision should be overturned, our motion for summary disposition should be granted, and there should therefore be an order that the records be turned over. If we prevail on the second argument, but not the first, then the order should be a remand so that the school district be ordered to redact any exempt material from the non-exempt material.
I'm going to ask you a tough question. Just standing back now, what do you think is the proper recourse? Just a definitive statement from us reversing or a remand and let the judge sort it out like it probably should have in the first place by an in-camera review?
I think that, I know you want a straight answer, and I'm trying to give a straight answer.
No, that's okay.
If these are not education records, then I think it could just be a straight order reversing and an order saying the documents have to be turned over. If the court is not convinced on the first argument, and I hope I am convincing on the first argument, but rather views these as education records that should be subject to redaction, then I think that it would be appropriate either that Kalamazoo do the redacting or that the documents be provided to the court for an in-camera review. And I think that would be totally appropriate. Again, our first argument is they're not education records at all, so they should just be just turned over. And that is, I think, based upon not only a reading of the statute, but also the case law. Our second argument, which I think is a strong argument as well, and perhaps even stronger, is that these records under FOIA and under FERPA are subject to an exemption and redaction process. And that is I'll look at FOIA first, Section 14, which has this exemption. You exempt you take out the exempt material from the non-exempt material, which requires a review. That section applies on its face to all the exemptions in Section 13.
Let me ask you a pragmatic question. You do a lot of municipal law?
Yes.
Do you? Okay. How often do judges actually go in camera and review these materials?
I handled a number of FOIA cases. I'd say most of the FOIA cases I've handled, we've worked with the municipality or the school district cooperatively and either accepted the redaction or not. So a lot of times, at least my personal practice has been, there's been an ability to agree on the redacted materials. So.
Okay.
If you look at the underlying facts here, you know, my client actually said, take out the personally identifiable information. We're not interested in the actual student names. I mean, so it was really inviting the school to produce the forms with the redacted material. Instead, they just produced the form, which I think when you think about that, if they're saying it's an education record, how do they even turn over the form? Because that would suggest that the appropriate process is to look at the content in the form and redact anything that's personally identifiable. And I think that the plain reading of FOIA requires that, and is supported by the Michigan Supreme Court in the case we cited, Harold versus Eastern Michigan University, which came out right out and said, Section 14 redaction applies without exception to all public records. It didn't make some sort of exclusion for records that were protected under Section 13.2, which is FERPA. And so we think a plain common sense reading of the statute requires redaction. We'd ask that if you don't accept our argument that these are non-education records, then at a minimum, they should be remanded so that there's a redaction process. And we don't object to a trial court looking at it in camera to make that initial determination. The association's position, I'll move to FERPA now, is also consistent with the actual language in FERPA. That's the code at U.S. Code 20 U.S.C. 1232G, subparens B, subparens 1, which absolutely contemplates the release of education records with redaction. And that subsection B1 reads, essentially, that no federal funds shall be available where there is a policy or practice of permitting, quote, education records, then it has a parentheses, or personally identifiable information contained therein, close parentheses. And what that means is that it's explaining that the protected information is actually the personally identifiable information contained within the education record. I mean, it has to be that. Otherwise, that parenthetical is rendered meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. The school district has argued that it's an either or. It's education records or personally identifiable information. But really, the personally identifiable information is merely explaining in further detail what needs to be protected. And that's plain by the statute itself in section B1, and also by section B2, which further on notes that federal funds will be threatened with loss if, quote, any personally identifiable information in education records, end quotes, is released. So you got to read the statute as a whole. And when you do that, you can't escape the only conclusion, which is if it is an education record, there has to be a review and a redaction of anything that's personally identifiable. And the overwhelming weight of case law, you know, supports that. We've gone to jurisdictions outside of this jurisdiction, and that's only because I haven't seen a reported Court of Appeals or Michigan Supreme Court case directly related to FERPA and this particular issue. But there certainly are other courts that have done that, and I think they're not only are they persuasive, but I think they're well written. The first is the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals case, which was a Department of Education suing a number of entities, University of Miami of Ohio and the Ohio State University. A bunch of newspapers had sought all the student disciplinary records. And the case went around, and I think the Ohio Supreme Court initially said that they were not, discipline records were not education records, but ultimately the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals said that even though they're education records, it approved redacting from those education records, these student discipline records, any personally identifiable information. I think that's a very compelling rationale, and I think it applies in this case. The Indiana Court of Appeals in an Indiana University case involving...
Just stop you. The Sixth Circuit case was United States versus Miami University?
That's correct.
Okay, good.
And we've cited that in our brief. I don't have the cite right at the tip of my head, but it's been cited. The Indiana Court of Appeals also reached a similar decision involving the University of Indiana and Coach Bobby Knight. In that case, the Indiana Court of Appeals recognized that the documents that the plaintiff was seeking were education records, but said that both under the Indiana public disclosure law and FERPA, there should be redaction before release. It didn't say, as plaintiff or as defendant Kalamazoo argues here, that because it's an education record, it is fully exempt from release. That case is very instructive. And then another case, which I think is very instructive, is Osborne versus University of Wisconsin.
We have that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the cases all say the same thing, that although FERPA protects education records from disclosure, it's the personally identifiable information contained within those documents that are protected from disclosure. And if a request is made, it's incumbent upon the public agency to then go through the process of redacting that before turning it over. In this case, Kalamazoo Public Schools didn't do that. They just said, we're not turning it over. Here's a copy of the form. That's all you get. And we submit that that violates not only FERPA, but also violates the Michigan Freedom of Information Act. The arguments that the Kalamazoo Public Schools raise in this case fail. They rely on the Connoisseur Communications case. I might be pronouncing that wrong. That's the University of Michigan.
Well, let's do this. You're going to have plenty of time for rebuttal. Let's hear from them.
Fair enough.
And they can put their arguments right in front of us, then you can rebut them, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good. Thank you, Counsel. All right, we'll go with Appley.
Good Your Honors, my name is Craig Noland, and I represent Kalamazoo Public Schools. And I want to start my presentation by reading two sentences from my brief. And the reason I'm doing that is I do a fair amount of municipal work and a fair amount of work dealing with FOIA. I recognize the importance of FOIA, recognize its contours, the issues raised. But this is a unique case. It's the first time since Connoisseur that the Court of Appeals has had occasion to consider the FERPA exception. And Connoisseur, as you recall, concluded that the records at issue were education records and were in fact not disclosable. And what's interesting about Connoisseur was decided before FOIA was amended, I believe in the 2000. And the 2000 amendments were the first time, and this is unique to Michigan. Unlike any other sunshine law that I'm aware of, Michigan says that FOIA documents and information shall be exempt. So this, in this courtroom today, this is the second time that we're dealing with the FERPA exception. And while it's true that under FOIA, oftentimes it's the burden of the government to show, you know, satisfy a balancing test or to navigate privacy protections versus exemptions, that whole playing field is shifted 180 degrees. And I'm going to read two sentences of my brief because I think this sets the table. And this is what I would like the court to kind of follow me, if you would, as I walk through some of the main points. It's FERPA's mandate that the schools protect documents and information from disclosure, even where the district only has a reasonable belief that the information would be traceable to a student. They made a conscious choice to shift the balance in this particular instance from open disclosure, which certainly makes sense when pertaining to the affairs of government and public officials, to maintaining the privacy of individual students. One thing that has been overlooked, and again, I've got about four or five main points that I want to walk through, but one of the principal things I think the association has completely ignored is that FERPA protects both documents and information. And there are two separate subsections. So one deals with documents, education records, files, materials maintained by the district. The second is information contained in those documents. So if the association comes to the district and says, we want these disciplinary, student disciplinary forms, that's an educational record. And that's what we're dealing with here. But what if they said, well, okay, we don't want the form, just tell us what the discipline was. That's protected too. So I just think that's an important piece to kind of keep in mind as we navigate this. A primary issue identified by counsel and one that I am anxious to explore with this court is the bus referral discipline form and educational record as defined under FERPA? And for several reasons, it obviously is. First of all, it's a statutory definition. There are only two components. And whether we agree with the definition or not, whether we think it's too broad or not, this is federal law. This is what the requirements are. Simple. The document contains information directly related to a student. That's requirement one. Two, the document is maintained by the educational institution. Every single case decided by both state and federal courts that deal with the disciplinary measures, disciplinary documentation, are education records. And in fact, one of the best cases on that is that University of, or Miami University case. That's a lengthy case, and it goes through the whole legislative history of FERPA, and it describes and confirms that disciplinary records are education records by definition. So you got the statutory definition and you got the case law. And on the pleadings, you know, if you look at this case in the context of pleadings, what are they asking for? They are asking for a disciplinary record involving a student. What is it that they want? And I'm going to get, Judge Meter, to your question earlier, or to your practical comment about, you know, resolving this case. What is it that we want? What is it they're after? What is this whole case about? What they want and I'll quote, our request is for the final copy placed in the file, that's the student file, or the file, after the school staff decision section is completed. And if the copy of this section is blank, we desire a copy. They want a copy of the disciplinary result. This is not something they fill out. This is something that the district prepares at the completion of a disciplinary process. That is what they want. That is an education record. Judge Lipsy, in his ruling, recognized that education records, if you follow the statute, are more than just what's on a report card. And the case law tells us that. So they are after education records.
Well, that would mean an even stronger prediction then that the judge would disallow disclosure if the judge actually reviewed the materials in camera. The judge would see what you're alluding to and deny the request.
No, I think, Your Honor, because the form itself has all these sections. What is a student disciplinary decision? By subject matter, anything is said in that form relates to student discipline. You don't need to read it. And if it's blank, that tells you something about what the discipline is, number one. Number two, we do have an affidavit from Ms. Bergen, who is the Director of Student Services, uncontested affidavit. She oversees the entire disciplinary process for the whole district. And she's put in her affidavit that these, and I'll read it, I'll paraphrase it. The document, and I'm quoting, is utilized in a disciplinary process involving a student. So, Your Honor, I think by its very nature, you look at it both as a pleading, because the form itself is part of the pleading. What is it, the information they're after? It's disciplinary result. By definition, it's an education record. Its use has been established by an uncontested affidavit. Now, the association tries to say, well, that, you know, we've got our own affidavit. We have bus drivers who fill out a part of this form. And because they fill out the form, somehow that takes away or removes it as being an education record. Well, that argument isn't any stronger than a teacher who fills out a report card on a student. And the fact that a teacher fills out a report card doesn't remove the fact that it is an education record. So if I could move on, and I touched on this a little bit, and this may be one of the more important things that I think is dispositive. And it's very important. Again, let's be very clear. It's a one-count complaint that they filed. Paragraph 12 recites what the request is, and I read it before. It says they want a final copy after the school staffed disciplinary decision is completed. That is, by definition, an education record. But the point is also, Your Honor, it's personally identifiable information. Whatever you put on that form, in this case, whether or not it's an education record is personal identifiable information. In 2009, this is an important point, the Code of Federal Regulations in 2009 amended and expanded the definition of personally identifiable information. And I can't overstress this. Here's the definition, and this is what controls, because our Michigan FOIA is references and mandates that we apply FERPA. Personally identifiable information is information requested by a person who the education agency or institution reasonably believes knows the identity of the student to whom the education record relates. You know, think about that. That FERPA is saying if the institution has a reasonable belief that the requesting party would know the identity of the student, that is personally identifiable information.
Don't you think that our Supreme Court's decision in Evening News may be important in resolving this issue, and that is whether or not this is personally identifiable information under the CFR?
No, because under the CFR, by definition, what they are requesting, by definition, is personally identifiable information. Our affidavit for Ms. Bergen is uncontested. And it was uncontested in the trial court. It's not been contested in this court. Her reasonable belief, and it's in her affidavit, is that the requesting party would know the identity of the student. And that's not only just reasonable, it's obvious. The KEA is the association, it's their bus drivers, are their membership. They would know the identity of the student whom they're requesting this information. They did not challenge the affidavit, her reasonable belief, in the trial court. They didn't request her deposition. No contrary evidence was presented in the circuit court. We briefed this issue throughout, in this case, pages 28 to 33 and 38 to 39. No response, even in the reply brief, to that important point. So let's get now to the question of redaction. And maybe this goes to an observation Your Honor made.
Who's got the burden of proof, by the way, in claiming an exemption from disclosure? You, your client or the other side?
I think that the way the FOIA exemption reads, that it's mandatory, that it shall be exempt, I believe they have the burden of proof to tell us why it's not. And that's completely different than those other subsections that we've talked about in our brief that are more, you know, you got to demonstrate a balancing test and all the rest. But let's talk about redaction. So you've got this form, and they say all we want is the information on this form that tells what the discipline is or whether there's been any discipline. That's all they ask for. And our position is, not only is that an education record because it's a disciplinary document, but it by definition is personally identifiable information because the requesting party, at least we have a reasonable belief, and it's good faith belief that's never been challenged, that the requesting party would know the identity. So if they say, well, go ahead and redact, okay, we'll redact everything on that staff disciplinary decision because that is personally identifiable information. And when counsel says, we're free to redact. You see where I'm getting with this? I mean, it's kind of a pointless exercise at some point because, as I said, the what they're asking for is by definition personally identifiable information. You know, the judge made the observation, and I think correct, when he rendered his decision, that matters of discipline involve and incorporate the educational process. I'm asking this court whether you agree or not with the definition of education record that in the context of this case we should and we're required to accept it. The cases that have been cited that speak specifically to disciplinary records have all conclude that they are education records. The cases cited by the association really have nothing to do with this situation. They are talking about witnesses. A student who is interviewed as a witness to a malfeasance by a school employee. They are not documents pertaining to that student's education record. They don't specifically or directly relate to that student. These are just witnesses. That's that Wallace case and several of the other cases cited. So there are two things I'd like to end with that I'd ask the court to consider. And one that I haven't spent a lot of time in oral argument on, but I think is very, very important. This is an important case for the school district. As I said earlier, this is the second time that I'm aware of that this issue of FERPA, the interplay of FERPA and FOIA intersect. But if you take a fair reading of the statutory requirements under FERPA, that this is an education record. And an education record, if you reach that decision, it is exempt, period. it is exempt. Now, you can also argue, well, personally identifiable information is also exempt, but I strongly would ask the court to consider that point. But even if you can't get there, on the facts of this case and the result in this case, is we would ask that the court conclude that the judge made the correct decision, because again, this is by definition, they are requesting personally identifiable information. What they are after is by definition protected. And so I think that the court reached the right result and would ask that the decision of the circuit court be affirmed.
Questions, judges?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I do have a...
Let me start off by asking you the same question I asked Brother Counsel. So, our Supreme Court's decision in Evening News, do you think it's important in how we resolve, as you call it, the second issue?
I do think it's... I want to make sure I'm following on the Evening News case that you're referencing. Is that the Herald?
Yeah, the Evening News Association, 417 Michigan, at 516. The court dealt with a number of issues, including burden of proof.
Right.
But did suggest that the natural tendency, I'm quoting, of bureaucracies to protect themselves by revealing no more information than they have to, and other factors, suggested that the trial court should, wherever possible, conduct an in-camera review, et cetera, et cetera.
No, I think that's I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I think that's a seminal case from the Michigan Supreme Court addressing the Freedom of Information Act. It gets to the heart of what the act is designed to do, and that is to say, you know, by law, public records are subject to disclosure, and that if there's a claim that they are protected from disclosure, the burden falls on the public entity contending that they shouldn't be disclosed.
I mean, if this case were remanded and the judge reviewed the materials in camera and said, hey, I'm not going to order disclosure of any of this, just you can't redact it. And the document itself, redacted, would suggest who the student is, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It ends there, right?
Well,
nobody sees these documents while the judge is looking at them, or am I wrong on that?
I mean, I think we would have a right to know the rationale if the judge does an in-camera review, if he reached that conclusion that we're not entitled to see any of the redacted form. But I take issue with the notion that somehow everything would be redacted because it would reveal personally identifiable information. And that gets to kind of what we want, and the council had asked, well, what does the association want? We don't want names of students. We don't want personally identifiable information that's going to say, well, this was the student involved. You know, driving a bus is extremely difficult work. It becomes 10 times more difficult when you had 10 kids, 20 times more difficult when you had 20 kids. The information with respect to these forms will inform the drivers in the association how to make the work environment better, which makes driving safer.
And what was the genesis of this? Something happened, right? Something happened in terms of activity on school buses?
Well, I can't say that there was a specific act that occurred, other than, in general, drivers find the work environment challenging. And this information might inform them on how to make it better, which could make driving safer. Whether it's, okay, the issues that we're seeing are students not being strapped in properly. That can then be addressed. Or the issue may be students not wearing their harness properly. If that's what the overwhelming form suggests, those would be ways then to make the driving better for drivers and then safer for students.
Isn't this where municipal entities sit down with the worker associations and talk about these things?
That's what you would hope. I'm not sure enough communication occurred in this case, and I think communication stopped after. And again, this is not on the record. Yeah. And I think, you know, from the association standpoint, what the association wants above all is to provide its workers with a safe working environment, which is going to make it safer for the students on the buses, okay? And so this information, taking out all the student names, can give you information about what problems in general are the drivers facing. I mean, if we find that there are more problems with, you know, afternoon runs as opposed to morning runs, or if there are more problems with students, you know, opening windows when they're not supposed to, there might be ways to address that in totality. And for those reasons, you don't need the names or any personally identifiable information. You know, in its totality, these forms would presumably inform the association and the drivers, here are some of the main issues that are real issues, that are recorded issues that can be addressed. And you would think Kalamazoo Public Schools would want to engage in conversation with their own drivers about that.
Right. Council, opposing council also mentioned Conasur versus U of M.
And
you think that case is even helpful?
I don't think that case is on point at all. You know, Conasur was a FERPA case and addressed FOIA, but the arguments raised there weren't anything we're arguing. First, the Conasur plaintiff argued that the writings were directory information. I mean, we're not contending that. That's not an issue in this case.
Well, there are some pretty important statutory changes that occurred thereafter.
That is true as well.
And our Supreme Court then had occasion to look at those in OWASSO. Smelled funny. OWASSO, Independent School District.
That is true, and I wasn't even getting to the fact that the language in the statute has changed, but even the issues that Conasur addressed are not issues that we're raising here. We're not saying this is directory information.
It was a pretty sketchy and conclusory case.
It was very short. You know, there wasn't a lot of rationale, and the issues addressed were not issues that we're raising here. We're not arguing.
Let me interrupt. We want to make sure we cover all the bases here and address all the cases that you, counsel, think are important. Okay.
Yes.
So your position is it's really not helpful.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, true. So I'll move on from that. As far as the statute itself, counsel argued that it's mandatory. It shall be exempt. And you read that from Section 13.2 of the FOIA itself. If you actually look at the statute, I would submit it's not mandatory. It's not really different than any of the other exemptions. It says a public body shall exempt from disclosure information that, and then there's if released, would prevent the public body from complying with FERPA. So our whole point here is what we're asking doesn't prevent Kalamazoo Public Schools from complying with FERPA. We're asking that they comply with FERPA. My client doesn't want to see Kalamazoo Public Schools lose any public funding. If you comply with FERPA, which we maintain that they would do if they go through the redaction process, not only are they in compliant then with FOIA, but they're also in compliant with FERPA. So as it relates to this contention that this is a mandatory, you know, exemption that from FOIA that's different than all the other exemptions, the statute doesn't support that at all.
Should the case be published?
I take counsel's point that there isn't a case other than Conasur that deals with FERPA and FOIA, and that is definitely an issue that comes up a lot. Not just in the context of bus drivers in this case, but
we don't normally ask counsel that, but you gentlemen are very proficient. It's obvious in the area of municipal practice, but there's always a mechanism to deal with that later.
That's true. Okay. But I think it would help practitioners on both sides if there was some guidance from the court on this. Our argument that these are not disciplinary records, you know, that is an argument. That's not our main argument, but it is an argument that they're not disciplinary records, therefore they're not actually FERPA protected records. And that's based really on the evidence in Trisha Dinda's affidavit where she, you know, identifies bus drivers don't give discipline. Bus drivers don't discipline. They fill out these forms. They might include comments about students. They might include comments just in general about the bus environment. But they're not disciplinarians. And that's one of the reasons why we contend they're not disciplinary forms. We would agree that the majority of case law says if it is a disciplinary record of a student, then it likely is an education record. But we're contending that these forms themselves are referrals. They're not actually discipline, and therefore they're not education records. But even if you find their education records, it doesn't avoid the school's obligation to redact.
All right, you have 1 minute to wrap up.
Thank you. Burden of proof, and I think I addressed this. We maintain absolutely it's the burden of proof is on the public entity if they're claiming an exemption.
Claiming the exemption.
Yes.
That's evening news.
Correct. And I think that finishes it. We'll rely on our briefs for the other matters. Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, do you know how many documents are involved?
I do not.
Okay,
nope.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for your excellent presentations, and they will greatly assist the court. And with that, the case is submitted.